Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle, and I turned and looked, and it was already moving away, and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75-degree angle straight down, almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around, go home.
He was extremely narrow-minded, arrogant, and ignorant, and that's always been my opinion of him, always. I know the upbringing that Wiley's had. I know the upbringing a lot of the grime scene have had, and their facts and sources come from stuff their mate has told them while they're coming over and sitting on the couch smoking a joint.
Yeah.
And YouTube videos.
I'm about to go on a rant. Firstly, let me just say I'm delighted to have Josh Friend from internationally acclaimed Modestep on the show. He's actually an old friend of mine, and it's a great podcast as he really speaks his mind and doesn't mince his words. In the UK this week, a leading rapper known as the godfather of the grime subgenre, Wiley, went on an anti-Semitic tirade. A tirade is being kind, as it was about as subtle as Mein Kampf. I don't say that with hyperbole. The things he said had nothing to do with the typical criticism of Israel or Zionism. This was straight up, the Jews are slippery, the Jews are like the KKK, and the Jews need to be shot and killed. All things he said.
Crawl out from under all your little rocks and come and defend your Jewish privilege now.
He called out for the top Jew to come and speak with him, and he very nearly came on this podcast, but then didn't turn up in the Zoom meeting. Things are very different in the US and the UK regarding the Jewish race, and it is a race if only for the simple reason that if Hitler were here today, devout atheists such as myself would be put on the trains. In the UK, there's been a steady move towards both the right and the left, where some of the more insidious anti-Semitism has been cropping up. As famous scholar Helen Pluckrose explained on last week's podcast, the Jews have been kicked out of the woke pyramid of minorities. This, despite Jews only making up 0.5% of the British population, compared to 14% for Black, Asian, and minority ethnic people. The whole woke or social justice philosophy is centered around well-meaning ideas of equality and redressing societal imbalance. And let's be honest, they consider a group of people who have been persecuted throughout history, from the Russian gulags and ghettos where my family toiled for generations, to concentration camps, as the privileged elite. This, despite today, on both sides of the Atlantic, being the overwhelming target of religion-based hate crimes. For example, around 70% of US hate crimes in 2017 were aimed at Jews. As former racist Matthew Collins told me on this podcast a few weeks ago,
the Jews existed everywhere and you couldn't even look in your cupboard without one hiding in.
In my own personal experience, I've been called all sorts of names, including Shylock at university, the Shakespearean character. I've been told countless times by production companies that they can't take my documentaries because I'm white. And whenever I've explained that I'm Jewish, I've been laughed out of the offices. Not a month goes by where somebody doesn't make reference to my apparent stinginess or greediness, and when I release a new video on YouTube or the BBC's page, it's propped up by countless online idiots referencing the fact I'm not to be trusted. My last name, Gold, suggests I'm a Jew. It was once Goldstein, changed by my father for sounding too Jewish. Now, such is the toxicity around this ethnicity that my 13-year-old sister was chased down the street by a group of men screaming scum Jew at her. Not something from the 1940s, but 2019. But you know what? When someone like Wiley says what he says, it doesn't hurt that much. He's a complete nutcase. Jewish people, like most minorities, will see that kind of thing on YouTube comments and on Twitter daily. You learn to just block it out. What does hurt is hearing pseudo-intellectual rationalizations and explanations from respected left-wing journalists and public speakers. Typically, when you're attacked as a minority by some racist fascist on the right, you can look to the left for support. When the left close their eyes to this, we're left feeling very lonely, and it hurts. I'm brought back to my first experience of being somehow other in the United Kingdom when I was at a football game with my dad at 10 years old and the fans around us hissed to mimic the sounds of the gas chambers. As many of you know, I was on the radio this week to discuss the whole Wiley incident. It doesn't matter which channel or who the presenter was, but she explained away Wiley's tweets.
They absolutely hit the borderline of, can we call this anti-Semitic? Perhaps you saw Wiley's tweets and you think he has a point.
She was a former Guardian journalist, and that's an important point because that paper is supposed to be our allies to the left. But the Guardian released a bewildering article after Wiley's rant. A great big photo of him looking smug, his hand raised triumphantly in the air. The headline reading, Wiley tells Jewish community, Israel's not yours. They appeared to be championing him and amazingly making it about Israel, a country Wiley mentioned once or twice out of thousands of messages that were very clearly aimed at the Jewish people. Later, another supposed ally in the form of The Voice, a newspaper popular in the black community, published an article in defense of Wiley's statements. So here we are in 2020, and mainstream respected newspapers are basically writing that Jewish people are bad and debating the whys and the hows and the what to do with us. This hurts, but it's also dangerous. So this is a call to arms. Because the only ally in the UK that I see the Jewish people having now is the moderates. I'm not asking people to stick a black box on Instagram and say they hate racism because nobody agrees about what constitutes racism. Nobody thinks they're racist. That's the whole problem. On the right, I'm not racist, but look at the stats connecting this particular minority with crime or whatever it might be. On the left, I'm not racist, but look at the stats relating to Jews and how they might be owning the world. All I'm asking is that when you hear this kind of thing that Jews are running the world, or even if they're talking of boycotting Israel while happily supporting the World Cup in Qatar or the previous one in Russia or being totally ignorant about the plight of Muslims in China, I just ask that you stand up and say, hey, I don't agree with that and I'm not going to let this narrative continue because history shows us where it leads. Josh Friend is a musician, the main man of Modestep. Look them up, you'll know their tunes, really eclectic and original stuff. He's worked with Wiley, he knows him. He knows his character, and it's a fairly damning report. But what's fascinating about talking with him is we get a look into where Wiley's racism comes from. I'm upset this is overshadowing what would have been an interview more focused on the music industry and Josh's place within it, and the amazing work Modestep have done. But I also feel lucky I was able to catch up with him at this time. Subscribe to get next week's podcast too, where I'm speaking with a sociopath, not Wiley, but an actual sociopath. More on that at the end. Have you ever come across Wiley?
We are recording.
Yeah.
We? Yeah.
You can tell me stuff off the record. I mean, look, I've known you 58 years.
No, it's fine. Okay, so my first experience with Wiley was in Australia. In 2012, I think it was me, Wiley, Skepta, and some of the managers from Boy Better Know. And we were all in a bus on our way to somewhere in Australia because we were doing a whole tour of Oz together. And my only impressions that I got of Wiley was very argumentative, very opinionated, and even though he was talking that, I'm talking about the stuff we were talking about in the van, the stuff he was talking about, I am a very informed person, but he still argued with me and tried to make me feel like a piece of shit for having a different opinion to him. So from then on, I kind of writ him off as somebody who's just narrow-minded and ignorant. And for the last 10 years, both my brother and Pat, the drummer in the band, big grime fans. I'm not a massive grime fan. It's never really been like, I was garage, and when it hit grime, I was a little bit less into it, to be honest. They're huge fans. So every time they would big Wiley up, my opinion of him stayed from that time I met him, where he was extremely narrow-minded, arrogant, and ignorant. And that's always been my opinion of him, always. Yeah. So when this stuff appeared, I think you saw I was one of the first people online to actually call him out. And instantly unfollowed me and blocked me, like he does with anyone that has a different opinion to him. And he just lives in, like, it's difficult to really, like, to really blame people like this, because I know the upbringing that Wiley's had. I know the upbringing a lot of the grime scene have had. And their facts and sources come from stuff their mate has told them while they're coming over and sitting on the couch smoking a joint, and YouTube videos. So really, you can't blame them. They're not informed. They're not people that have educations. They don't have any, like... And obviously what's happened with him, and I can see it happens a lot in the industry, is you get fucked over by your manager and you try and find a reason to hate them. And obviously a lot of managers in music business are Jewish. So it's very easy for him to point the finger. And obviously he has mental health illness, mental health problems, which I think is quite evident by all of this. And he's lost the fucking plot, mate. And it happens once every 3 months as well. Like, I think the majority of Wiley's following on Twitter isn't fans, it's people watching him.
Okay, like Trump.
Exactly the same.
What would you have said about him if I'd said we were off the record? Because that was quite damning.
Oh, right. Well, if we were off record, I'd say first time I met him.
Can I leave that bit in? Because the thing about that is my dad's got, he's been listening to them, and he got a bit upset that I've sworn on a few of them.
Yeah, I heard you replace the word fuck with fig on your last podcast. So I was about to drop a bunch of figs in this one.
I don't know if you've actually met him, but back in the day, I used to show him your music. So he's going to be doubly disappointed. This is going to be a running theme.
Hey, this is rock and roll. This is rock and roll. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's going to have a problem with your tattoos, by the way, as well.
Yeah, well. Come to
he says the same thing about tattoos and swearing, right? Exactly the same thing. Can you guess what it might be?
God doesn't appreciate it.
No. just not necessary.
Not necessary, correct. Well, I'm sure I could point out many things that are probably not that necessary.
His son.
Definitely his son, and his son's podcast as well.
Yeah, well, you're on it, mate. Yeah. It's getting a lot of listens, so a lot of people will be listening to this now.
Great.
Yeah. So
I told you, man, consistency is key.
I've got Wiley's number. Should we call him?
If you want. I don't think he'll pick up. The thing is, he's gone completely silent since all this happened. So it's either one of two things. He's in a mental hospital and there's people looking after him and caring for him, or the police have...
He's been Facebooking all day.
He has?
Yeah, he's got a proper... Because what's it? Do you know what his real name? It's something like Richard, isn't it?
Fuck knows, mate, to be honest. Richard, something like that.
He's been posting all day and...
That's the only platform that he's allowed to post on. That's what's happened.
Did you see my interaction with him?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very typical... By the way, Wiley's renowned for taking bookings and not showing up. That was like, back in the day, that was the meme about Wiley. That was his... what people thought of him. You know, you book him, you pay the money, there's... 5% chance of insurance.
Luckily, I should just point out, I didn't pay him any money, but I did say, for those who don't know, I said, he said, any top, we haven't actually explained what happened in case anyone, because some people don't know.
People in America don't know. Yeah, it's only the UK that know about this.
Yeah, so, like, maybe I'll do a bit at the beginning to explain a little bit, because we'll talk about him, but just for now, he's a grime music person.
He invented grime. He's the godfather of grime.
Yeah, do you want to? Why don't you say what he is and what he's done recently?
Wiley is considered the person who invented the genre grime music. He very opinionated and is known for his kind of social media outbursts. But this time he had obviously had some kind of altercation with his manager and came out with what can only be described as the most bullshit YouTube rambling nonsense about Jews that I've ever heard in my life. And it didn't go too well for him.
Unless it's what he wanted, because a lot more people have heard of Wiley. Because obviously in your industry, a lot of people have heard of him, but I hadn't heard of him.
You've never heard of Wiley?
No. Did you hear me? I was on the radio the other day, on Talk Radio, and I made a joke that fell flat because they said, had you heard of him before this had all happened? And I said, no. In fact, when I saw his name, I thought it might be Willie. And I thought maybe there'd be a chuckle, and it's just dead air for a few seconds. And I said,
I'm not sure you're allowed to say that on national radio.
I said, can you say Willie on national radio? And she said, don't think so.
No, only if it's your name, I think. It's like, you're only allowed to say cockerel and not cock.
That's it. Well, the things she had been saying, by the way, this was on Talk Radio, and the, her name is, in fact, it doesn't matter what her name is, but she was a presenter, and she said, Wiley's been tweeting, and she presented the whole topic, you know, and she said, is it anti-Semitic? It's on the border, but I don't know if you could call it anti-Semitic. Now we go to Andrew Gold.
Really?
I was so shocked that, and a bit nervous because it was live on the radio, so I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
But it was sort of called out on Twitter later. And then she said, after I got off,
I saw that, when I got off the air, she said,
you know, let's call in. Maybe you agree with what he's saying. Let us know. Call in.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw other people posting about that as well. Total fucking bullshit. Total bullshit.
It was really crazy. So I've got his number.
Yeah.
I could try and call him.
Give it a go. Go on. See what happens.
What if I say I'm a journalist. I've got Josh Friend from Modestep here. You were call, because, okay, that was the other thing we haven't filled people in with. He was calling out the top Jew. Can we talk to the top Jew? He wants to debate the top Jew about Jews being slippery and horrible people.
So you went straight to the ranking system.
Yes.
Straight to the website of Jew ranking. And
I was aware that obviously a top Jew, we're talking David Baddiel, Sarah Silverman. No?
Sarah Silverman's like the least Jewish person on the fucking planet. So is like Seth Rogen. All these people can't be buried in fucking in Jewish in burial grounds. Like they're not real Jews. This is the thing.
No, but no one is. But when you say top Jew, I've interpreted top as most famous, and you're interpreting it as most Jewish.
Yeah, so fucking rabbi. That's what I consider a top Jew.
He didn't want to speak to a rabbi.
He didn't. No, of course he didn't. Of course.
He wanted to speak to, well, now he's been name dropping. So he's been saying, David Baddiel, talk to me.
It's all right, a Rothschild. There we go. That's probably what he's after. The one with the most money is what he's talking about, really.
He's been saying David Baddiel all day.
I need to see this stuff, to be honest with you.
On Facebook, his real Facebook has been going, David Baddiel, come and talk to me, David Baddiel.
But Baddiel will talk him under the table. The last person he wants is a witty Jew.
But do you know what I mean? The very fact that you have to be sitting there defending being a Jew, you've already lost. That's the thing. So Baddiel coming, I don't think he'd do that. And I knew that none of the BBC, they're not going to platform this guy. So I figured if you take all the sort of normal Jews out of this who are actually quite famous and stuff, maybe I am one of the top Jews who would allow him to have a platform.
Well, first of all, you're not fucking top anything, mate.
I'm top everything.
Out your head. Instantly out your head.
Yeah.
No, I agree. It should just be an everyday person who doesn't particularly identify as Jewish but has heritage of it. We're both in that. I don't know if you do, to be honest with you. That's an assumption on my part. Mm. But I certainly don't really identify as being Jewish, but all my family are. And I guess that was the first 10 years of my life, you know, that was the upbringing I had. But
we used to talk about this a lot in our teens. Because I think we bonded over not wanting to be part of it. But do you find, like I'm starting to find, the more anti-Semitism you experience or the more of that kind of thing, the more you do start to, not with the religion, but you start to identify with the just, hey, that's my family you're talking about.
Yeah, yes and no. And the only thing that I identified with was the direct shots at my grandparents who were in concentration camps. So I'm not saying, oh, me and my people, because no, mate, I don't believe in religion. I don't. No. I think it's all fucking nonsense. And honestly, if I could get rid of Judaism as a religion, careful, I would. No, I would. I'd get rid of all of them. I'd get rid of every religion. I'm an open anti-religious atheist.
And Josh Friend on the Edge with Andrew Gold podcast said I would get rid of all of them, I would just like to point out that as far as I can tell, he was referring to religions and not Jewish people.
All religions, get rid of them. They cause more problems than they do not cause. But you're correct. I saw that and I thought, who the fuck is this guy? Who? And you know what really upset me, Andrew, was the amount of support that myself and other people gave to Black Lives Matter. And to see that instead of all the people who are supporting Black Lives Matter are jumping on and going, you know what? This is more bullshit. This is more minorities being hurt. Let's back it.
Yeah.
Silent across the board, across the fucking board. And that really pissed me off more than anything else. Was like, where's this double standard come from?
I don't know if you agree with me on this, but when you see what Wiley wrote, you go on Twitter, you see what he's written. It's not, it doesn't hurt. It's not making me cry or whatever.
Mate, you
know, it doesn't.
You knew some of like the holding the corn stuff. That's drill talk for being shot. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So it does. So, so then you disagree. What I'm going to say though is like, because it's so mental when you get someone who's anti-Semitic on the right wing. So I've had this on YouTube, the videos I put up, and I'm sure, I don't know if you would have actually, because you don't have anything that's characteristically Jewish. My name Gold gives it away straight away. Yeah. So whenever I post anything, there are usually one or two comments going, oh, so, yeah, well, what ethnicity are you from? State your ethnicity, will you? And all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just think you are a bloke sitting at home covered in your own feces with a tin hat on. I don't care. But then when you get this Guardian woman who was the woman who was presenting on talk radio, when you get those kind of things, when they go, is it anti-Semitism? I'm not sure. That hurts because that could be a friend of yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And honestly, the thing that hurt more than Wiley saying this stuff was the responses. Because I would say it was like a 90 to 10% split in favor of what he was saying.
Well, those followers, aren't they?
A lot of people arguing for him and saying, yeah, yeah, he's right. You know, and there are people that sit on the fence, and as soon as Wiley states his position on things, they follow him.
I'm going to see if I can call Wiley.
Oh, God. Don't say I'm here. I don't
want to. No, well, the whole point is saying you're here.
No. Not happening.
No, well, then I'll do it another time. Because otherwise, I want to get him to come on to a Zoom call with me.
It's not going
to
happen. Yeah, do it. Do it on.
Yeah, but if he does say yes, then he's going to come in the call then, isn't he?
That's fine. I'll get off. In fact, I'll just sit mute. I'll block my camera out and watch it with you.
All right. Well, we could. All right.
Go on, give him a call.
Why can't I say I've got Josh from Modestep? You've bottled it, mate.
No, I don't want to be involved with his... I'll tell you why, Andrew, because 6 months ago... actually, it was March. It was the day that the lockdown happened. Yeah. I had death threats from the Grime community, so I'm not having that again, mate. Yeah, I had actual death threats. I had people saying they were going to come up to my show and kill me. So I'm...
Should we leave Wiley then? Maybe we shouldn't do that. Or we could prank call him.
I think... Hello, Wiley! No, not getting involved with it, man.
Okay.
But welcome to call. Do it. I think you should do it, quite honestly.
I might do it another time, you know.
Yeah. I think it'll be a scoop that would be good for you. And yeah. I would love to hear the conversation, because you're quite used to speaking to extreme people, I guess. People with very extreme thought patterns, and you're...
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the other thing, if he was looking for a top Jew, I mean, there are not many... Now that I've outed you as one... There are not many topper Jews than you. You got millions and millions of YouTube videos. I'm doing a segue here. Millions and millions of YouTube videos, watches, views, whatever, and Spotify and all that. What's it like having loads of fans?
Strange, because it happened over 10 years. So like the initial time where we broke out and suddenly there was like a bunch of people who were coming to see us. It happened so fast that none of it registered. It was very whirlwind. I think like I was working a job at the Apple store within 6 months, handed in my notice. And I was then spent 3 years on a tour bus from then on. So it was from like 2010, 2013, late 2013. I've not been home. I spent it all on a tour bus. So it was a real like whirlwind change in my life. I was like, I'm going from serving people in the Apple store to being shipped around the world to see all my fans. So that was weird. But now it's kind of like, I think we just hit 10 years since Sunlight came out. So now it's like very different. It's all the fans who have stuck with me for 10 years. I know some of them by name, and they're getting me through this whole pandemic. Like I'm streaming, people donating to me, people like being Patreons. And without these people, I'd be totally, sorry, Andrew's dad, fucked in this situation.
I've seen you having a few arguments with people about the Patreon thing. What's going on there?
Yeah, so there's this... I had a big fallout with another DJ. I speak to a lot of DJs, obviously. That's what I do. I speak to a lot of them, and a lot of them, especially those who are on visas in America, are suffering really badly because we don't get any unemployment out here. We don't get any help from the government in the UK. We don't get any help from the government over here. And we can only work as musicians because that's what our visa states. So I can't go and start running an Uber if I wanted to just earn a bit of money on the side. I can't do it. So I made a very clear point on Twitter that for some reason, artists have to give this impression that we're all killing it. We're all balling in life, yeah. No matter what. You know, oh, we're up in the crib. We do it like, for some reason, hip hop has changed the way that people see celebrities. And yeah. We all have to look like we're superstars, no matter what. And I made a point on Twitter that went viral that it may seem like that's what we have to put across. But just so you know, I am friends with a lot of these people and there's a chance they may not have this career after the end of coronavirus. And some really entitled DJ said, no, you're wrong. You're wrong about this. If you work hard enough, no matter what, you'll be able to do it because this is what you love and it's music.
Jesus.
And I was like, you're just not understanding it, mate. You're coming from privilege here. Totally coming from privilege. Yeah. And it turns out that he had a job in finance before before he was a DJ. And he still does stocks and this, that, and the other. And he put out an awful tweet saying, to all my DJ friends, make sure you have at least 10 months worth of money in your bank account ready for this emergency period. And now's a great time to get involved in stocks. And it's like, mate, you have no idea. You've been in this for like 2 years. You're doing very well. So you've got a lot of money. And yeah. You've obviously had money before this, so you've had money to put in it, and therefore you can exponentially grow your money. And just not really a fair thing to say.
Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts.
There is an assumption, isn't there, that whenever you see anybody on TV or like doing anything, they've got like endless money and stuff.
Especially with artists. And I don't think people really understand that they are the bottom feeders for every contract. So if you look at any agreement, you've got record label, management, agent, every company takes their share before the musician takes their share. And the debt always sits with the musician. So,
yeah. Do you know, I can't remember if I've told you already, but how much I made making that Exorcist film.
No.
So I made this documentary, won loads of awards, all this stuff. It ended up being top of BBC Three's, one of their top best of 2018, whatever. I did loads of stuff for it, worked, did loads of different roles for it, and got zero out of it. Got less than zero. I lost money on it. But people watching that show would assume like, oh, he's rolling in it.
Yeah, and I feel like that's journalists. It really feels like anyone who's creative or anyone who's like the one putting the grind in always ends up the bottom of the deal because they know you're doing it out of passion. And then they know that there's other people who will do it and take that seat in a fucking heartbeat.
That is 100%.
It's a real issue with like how these industries have been carved out. And to Wiley's credit, it's disgraceful the way that musicians are treated. It really is. But you definitely can't put it down to a certain ethnicity. Definitely doesn't lie with that. I mean, I've had Greek managers that have totally fucked me over. I've had Christian managers who have totally fucked me over. If you're a manager and you're in the music industry, you're gonna fuck people over because that's kind of what you're part of a business. You're not part of any of the creative side. You've got involved in this because you want to earn money. And some of them do it for passion. And luckily I am now with a team where my manager, big fan of my act, my agent, there's not a single person anyone can say anything bad about him at all. They're just good people. It's taken 10 years to find these people. The majority of the industry is totally fucked. And you even have to look at Spotify. Spotify this year, I think they're worth like 50 billion or some shit like that, some crazy number. I get paid per stream 0.0002% at 0.002 cents. So I have to get 200,000 plays to make less than like $1,000 or something. It's crazy. Mm. I mean, they take so much of the percentage of wow. our money that it's basically ineffective as a as an earning tool. You know, I basically use it as a promotion tool. They take all the money. And then when you factor in record label and management, and I basically see nothing. For any music I make ever, I've never seen a penny.
Mode Set's been like, it's been, you know, you've got some absolute bangers. If you've been, do people say bangers?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, got some bangers, got some tunes. There's been some, there's been tunes all day in the Gold household, which has just had me in it. My girlfriend's convinced that she's heard Sunshine Hurts My Eyes in films or adverts.
Mm, likely. Yeah.
Has it been in several?
Possibly. It's definitely been in films. It was definitely in, like, if she's ever watched any of like any English The Only Way Is, or any of the, I don't know, The Only Way Is Essex, or Made in Chelsea, and all of those.
Did you know that was going to be, because that's just like a massive hit, but it wasn't immediately obvious to me, because I was listening to them at the time. It wasn't obvious to me that that was going to be the one, because I think you had another song called Feel Good, and then there's mm-hmm. Another Day, and mm-hmm. I think they were all singles, but mm-hmm. I think maybe one of those two could have been. Do you know, do you have a feeling before?
Yeah, yeah, we knew that Sunlight was going to be the one. In fact, we like, I wrote, it's interesting, I wrote Sunlight, Feel Good, To the Stars, and Show Me a Sign in like 2 days, all of those songs. We just knew, it was like, this was our batch of songs, and we were like, right, Sunlight, that's going to be the one. We knew,
wow.
We just knew, because it had like a summer feeling, and had the right, yeah, I just 100% knew that that was going to be the one.
Was Sunlight hurting your eyes when you wrote it? Seriously, was there something like that happening?
You don't understand what the lyric of the song is. Is that what you're saying to me? You're a journalist. You're
I want you to explain the lyric of this of the thing.
All right. So it's sunlight hurting your eyes is once you've been out partying till 5 a.m. the sun comes up and then you leave the club and you go, oh, fuck. That's and I think a lot of people can relate to that, and that's probably why why it took off the way it did. Yeah.
There was a great song that has a similar idea on London Road. I can't remember the name of the title of the track, but it's on the Night Bus. Is it called Night Bus?
Night Bus Home, yeah.
Yeah, and I like that. That really worked. It really, you got the sound of the Night Bus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like, I'd say that's probably my favorite Mode Step tune.
Is it?
Yeah, really proud of that one.
In fact, really...
that the whole album didn't really do very well. We got, again, fucked over by management, totally fucked over. Let me explain to you, actually. Here we go. Here's a very good... These are the kind of things that have upset Wiley, and I can totally sympathize with it. So that 200,000 that we had for the record, right?
Yeah.
And you wanted a breakdown of how that money was spent. So we were given 200,000 to make and sell this record. I spent making the record, I think it was roughly like 20,000, 30,000 pounds.
Okay.
And that was like studio costs, couple of mix engineers mastering this, that, and the other. So once we had made the record, I went to my management company, who at the time managed huge artists, fucking huge artists, Bring Me the Horizon, Iron Maiden, like huge acts. They had brokered us this deal for whatever, like £250,000, and had said to us, don't worry about it. We've managed to get you this deal. You never have to pay it back again. It's non-recoupable money. Don't worry about it. So we're like, all right, they know what they're talking about. We trust them. They manage these very well-known acts. So signed the deal, finished the album, and came to start promoting it. I'm like, right, so we want to shoot a music video for the first single. And they were like, oh, no, all the money's gone. I'm like, sorry, what? We had 200 grand. Where's all the money gone? And they went, oh, we spent it all. I'm like, don't you have to have my permission to do any of that? Oh, no, not really, no. It's like, okay. Where's it all gone? And they're like, oh, well, we spent £60,000 of it. We know a magazine in Germany. So they're going to give you an article in their magazine. That's 60 grand. So basically what they do is they have this network of friends that they have in the industry.
Oh, my God.
They sign like 10 bands a year. They abuse their power in the industry by getting these huge deals and signing these bands. They take their 20% gross cut of that money. So out of that 200 grand, they take their 20%. And then they do fucking nothing with it.
Mm.
So they didn't have any money to promote the record whatsoever. I think we ended up with £5,000 left that they spent. This was their big idea, was an ad van. So a big van that drives up and down London with the artwork on it. And that was how they were going to get us a number one album. And no shit, the album didn't do particularly well. But over the last 5 years since the record's come out, people have discovered it, and it's the numbers have fucking surged, and it's been like a natural discovery instead of, hey, Mozart's back with a new record, you know? But we obviously left that management company straight after all of that ordeal. And then I went to a lawyer to look over the contract, and it turned out they had fucked us over and we have to pay back all of that money. So all the money they spent and gave to their friends is now my debt.
Wow.
And this is like a very, very, very common deal that is done between bad management companies. And just to let anyone know who's watching this, if you're ever hit up by Raw Power Management, don't sign with them.
So. Yeah. Can I include that or would I get sued?
Absolutely can include that.
Yeah.
That is my opinion. That is not the opinion of this podcast. My opinion and my suggestion based on my experiences is do not sign with Raw Power Management.
My opinion is I quite like them and I hope that they're well.
He's best friends, actually.
I offer no opinion on them except to say that sounds like, well, that's what's got Wiley all wiled up. But yeah, the Jewish stuff's not ideal, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's someone, again, with mental health issues who has been through something that I've been through and gone, well, that someone must be to blame. It can't possibly be me and my lack of know-how. And I told you that I got death threats from the grind scene
like
about 3-4 months ago, and it was over a very similar thing. So we did a tune with a bunch of grind people.
Yeah.
Not something I wanted to do, something other members of the band wanted to do. And I was like, absolutely, let's give them a platform. Like, we're about to have a big record. Let's give them the opportunity. These are artists that my brother loved. Let's give them the opportunity and the space to... It was almost like, you know, you brought us up on your music. We want to give it back to you. We want to give something back to you guys.
Yeah.
So we brought a bunch of grime artists to our house, recorded this tune. And it turns out that a bunch of them didn't realize that they had to, on their side, register the song. And this is standard practice, right? So if you're in a song with me and you have 20% of it, when you go to register the song with PRS, which is the Performing Rights Society, which is where you register all of your royalty splits, they forgot to do it. And then didn't know for 7 years that they weren't earning money off this song. And then I suddenly wake up with a bunch of tweets from everyone who's like, yeah, we got fucked over by Modestep. They fucked us over. Oh. And really, it was their own fucking ignorance. They didn't sign. They didn't sign up to the website. And actually, one or two of them even did. And I ended up sending a screenshot to them and being like, mate, you are being paid for it. Like, this is evidence of it. Like, so I think there's a lot of this, like, people really wanting to be a victim.
Yeah.
Or not having a lot in life. And we know that, like, when you're not privileged and you feel like the world's against you, you try and fight out against it. And I think Wiley is the absolute like epitome of this mentality that is rife across the UK. You know, it's a real council estate mentality, in the sense that like, you're not born with anything. You're always fighting for everything you have. So you have this natural repellent to anything that is doing better than you, or there's this real jealousy and real why is the world treating me the way it's treating me, and you will look for bizarre answers to answer that, because the real answer is, unfortunately, the world is not very fair and everyone isn't aware of everything all the time, and you can't always be on top of everything and have all the knowledge about everything, and unfortunately education isn't equal. Some people aren't as clever as others, and this is the way of the world, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they still rip you off. They still rip me off. Everyone gets ripped off as part of the business. It does seem like that. You had Big Nasty on your album. He was the one I'd heard of the extra people. And you had a guy called Funt Case.
When I talk about the grime scene and these death threats, Big Nasty is totally removed from all of that. He's one of the nicest people, one of my close friends and people I don't really see associated with the grime scene. And actually, he has kind of separated himself a lot from it, because I think he noticed early on that there was this real dumb attitude that went along with grime and was very associated with grime. There was this like, he wanted to be bigger than that. He wanted to be like a personality and he wanted to be a TV presenter, and grime immediately turned their back on him. Even though he's exactly what they are. He's very talented. He's a great MC. He comes from the ground, from the underground, comes from nothing. This is what grime is. Nasty is what grime is. But because he doesn't want to stick to their exact set of rules, they turn their back on him. So I just want to say that he's like totally separate from, and there are a lot of Grime MCs that I've met, they're lovely people, and I don't want to list them all, but there is a lot of people who are nice, but there's just this overall generic ignorance and real ignorant mentality that they thrive upon and actually are proud of themselves for having. There's like this roadman mentality that like they kind of pride themselves in having.
Wow. Okay, you are slamming the Grime scene.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit. I'll be honest, like I'm at my wit's end with it because I've had to deal with it and work with them for the last 10 years. And I feel like Grime could have been something huge. And Stormzy's the only one who really had his head screwed on and really like saw the genre and the industry for what it is. And went, well, I'm just going to remove myself from this fucking narrow-minded, stupid mentality and just attack it properly. And he's the only one that's had any success from it. All the other guys have kind of like had half successes or had to really sell themselves short in order to get success. Wiley being one of them. He released a bunch of pop songs, which people ridiculed him for releasing. And then he has the argument of, you know, I'm the godfather anyway. I can do what the fuck I want. I do enough of the underground that, you know, that it justifies all that pop stuff. But
yeah, there's always that stuff, isn't there? There's always that argument. I mean, would you ever try to write some poppy stuff?
Yeah, we're like a pop crossover act. I don't deny it whatsoever.
Do you think? Because well, I guess in the scene it is, but to me and probably to a lot of my listeners as well, it's edgy.
Yeah,
that's why you're on the edge.
The edginess comes from the crossover part of it, you know. So the edginess comes from the underground dubstep stuff that I love. I also fucking love Backstreet Boys and Spice Girls and fucking.
What's your favorite Spice Girls song?
Favorite Spice Girls song. Ooh.
Trying to catch you out here. Trying to sound down to earth, are you, mate?
Yeah, big time.
You have a clue.
What's the really Latin one?
Viva Forever?
No. I think it's Spice Up Your Life.
Spice Up Your Life.
To be honest, the whole record is fucking phenomenal. You've got some of the best production and songwriting in the world. Viva Forever, fucking. All of them. They're all amazing, man.
Makes me cry.
What's that? Makes you
makes
cry.
Me cry, that song. Five?
Nah, fuck that. That's not peak pop music. That's crap. If we're talking like boy band, great pop boy bands, you've got to go with NSYNC.
Oh, you know what's funny? The other day, because my sister's 13, Madison. She'll like that little shout out to Madison. And the other day she said, she called up and she was saying, I've been listening to all this music from your age, you know, so it was all like 90s and stuff. And she talked about it like it was the way I might talk about something from the 50s. And she said, oh, and I've just got this one song from this band, NSYNC.
That's cute.
And I went, oh, how old does that make you feel?
Oh man, every day I feel old, and especially as like now I'm still touring these circuits in America,
yeah,
where it's like 18, 19 year olds, and I'm like so much older than that. It's terrifying.
I want you to write some like Josh Friend albums, you know, or at least another Mode Step album. I want to hear some new stuff.
Yeah, me too. I haven't written anything since lockdown. It's not been particularly inspiring.
You know what? That song, we talked about it before, but that song Time, right? And I know it was a tribute to Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
The way at the end, your vocals sort of, you're really giving it a go and stuff. And I love that. I love that. And it's got a bit of Jeff Buckley about it. And I thought, what if you did like an album of like a Josh Friend's just album?
It's the plan. Honestly, it is the plan. And I have tried to do it a couple of times, but if I do it, it's going to be... So it's going to take me so long to write the music because I'm going to be very, very picky about what comes out. Because I would want it to like sit in the leads of Jeff Buckley and Stevie Wonder.
Because there's no point otherwise.
There's no point in me doing it. So I either just stick with Mode Step and do like what I can do and I know it works and I love the music and I can do it very well. I want it to sit in the leagues of James Blake's, and I would want it to be like Grammy music, you know. I don't want it to be like, I wouldn't want to put all that effort in.
You could definitely do Grammy music. Would you let me sing on it?
No, not a chance in hell. You'll be coming out with all your Robbie Williams licks, and I'm just
that'd be a bit radio. I'll be doing some Radiohead stuff.
Watch this back, right? Guaranteed doesn't include this, that Andrew's favorite act was Robbie Williams growing up.
The thing is, if this were 5 years ago, this podcast, I wouldn't include it. But I've had a Robbie revival in my home.
You do?
Yeah, because I started showing my girlfriend, And I was like, oh, you know what? These songs. And it's impossible to separate the quality of the song from your own nostalgia, isn't it?
Yeah,
so I was just making the point to her, like, oh God, he's so much better though than all the, you know, the modern equivalent of whoever it is, One Direction or whatever. I was like, he's such a better pop star. Oh. And that's how it, but she was saying, oh, you know,
who is the modern day Robbie Williams? Who is it? Who have we got?
I read an article the other day saying that it's not as simple as they don't really have that anymore.
Harry Styles?
Yeah, maybe. They said Lady Gaga was the last pop star. Michael Jackson being like one of the first like solo pop stars, like of that kind.
Come on, man. Billie Eilish?
Yeah, I guess Billie Eilish, but it's not the same.
No, I'm talking like male rock star kind of thing. I guess it would be like Harry Styles or Zayn Malik.
Well, it was something. Only rock star. Robbie Williams was only that kind of thing because at the time, Britpop was the big thing. In the 90s, it was that, wasn't it? In the 80s, it was Michael Jackson. It was very different. It wasn't rock. It was more dancey stuff, wasn't it?
He still was kind of like a rock star in a weird way.
Yeah. How do you write a song? How does...
I can pretty much wake up and know based on how I feel that day whether I'm going to do it or not. And usually it's immediate, so I just sit down and play and it's there. Or like I've had the song in my head for like a week and then I'm like, it's already there. It's written in my head before. Yeah.
Can you write one right now?
Hold on. This podcast is shit. I need something other than Rogan to listen to now and again. So,
yeah. Well, you've been listening to this, haven't you?
I've been listening to this, not in full all the time. I get past like 5 minute mark. I've listened to quite a few of them, to be honest with you. I started listening to the woke one yesterday, but we ended up doing something else, watching something. But
was it a bit complicated for you?
No.
You sure, Josh?
Well, how about you throw some of the questions my way that you're sort of...
Well, we've had a similar conversation, to be honest. We always end up talking about the same thing, don't we? I mean, it's, you know, the world's gone mad.
I just feel like most people have opinions, don't give them. Those who do usually have a bad one. And that's like really where these echo chambers and social media are just not structured correctly for constructive talk. A lot of Twitter is just an echo chamber of your own beliefs.
But you and I are quite opinionated.
Yeah. I've become more and more opinionated on Twitter over the last year. And it's weirdly gained me more following on there, but then also a lot of more hate. So I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm as of this week, after all the Wiley stuff, I'm slowing it down with the Twitter shit because
yeah.
I don't know, man. It's just not real. It's not reality. Like Wiley wouldn't go up to a Jewish man and say that stuff to his face. Just wouldn't. Sorry, just wouldn't. And that's why he didn't get on the Zoom call with you. It's why he didn't do his Sky interview that he said he was just about to go and do before he disappeared off all of these platforms. Yeah, it's cheap talk.
Since speaking to Josh, Wiley has actually gone on Sky News to defend himself. He half apologized for speaking about all Jews instead of just Jews who are in the media, and then continued to talk about Jews being awful. Live on a huge mainstream platform. I hope Josh's interview has provided you with some context and showed how people might grow to believe certain conspiracy theories. If you know someone who believes this toxic stuff that Wiley has been spouting, show them this podcast, help them understand. Stick around, subscribe, please leave a review, it really helps. Next week I'll be back with a sociopath, M.E. Thomas, who wrote Confessions of a Sociopath about her life as a sociopath. Seems like a current theme on this show after Wiley. So I'm looking forward to talking to her about what it's really like. It's scary. See you next week.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.